Welcome to Vanguardia America. I'm your host, James Garcia. The following episode features an interview with Joe Goldenthal, the executive director of The Nash, a Phoenix nightclub and education center, as well as the club's namesake, jazz drummer and Arizona State University professor, Lewis Nash. Downbeat magazine calls The Nash one of the great jazz venues in the world. It recently marked its 10th anniversary. But The Nash is more than just a jazz club. It also provides unique educational opportunities that have been building a vibrant jazz community in Greater Phoenix and beyond by working with people of all ages, and especially young people, as a means to preserving and reviving the distinctly American musical genre. The club is named for Lewis Nash, whose career spans over 30 years and includes performances on 10 Grammy Award-winning albums, an impressive discography of more than 400 recordings with jazz legends such as Betty Carter, Dizzy Gillespie, Oscar Peterson, McCoy Tyner, Hank Jones, and Sonny Rollins, as well as contemporary jazz artists like Branford and Wynton Marsalis, Diana Krall, Roy Hargrove, and others. The first person who responds to me during the interview is Joe Goldenthal. I hope you enjoy the show.
I wanted to start out just briefly with you gentlemen by relaying when I fell in love with jazz. It's been quite a long time ago, and I call myself a jazz lover, not a jazz aficionado. But for me, it was hearing my first Ella Fitzgerald album and then deciding, because I thought she was so fantastic, to get a job for one night as a waiter at the convention center in Fort Wayne, Indiana, just so that I could hear her perform live. And got to hear her perform live, and have never forgotten the experience since. And from that point on, I was hooked. But I'm so happy to talk to you guys tonight about the club that you have created. So let's talk first, if we could, the origins of it. Why did this club come to be?
Well, the Nash is the latest iteration of Jazz in Arizona, which is a nonprofit organization founded in 1977. To create a jazz community in the desert. But around 2010 or so, we came to the realization that we were not attracting enough young people to this art form. The average age of attendance at a jazz event was 75 plus.
And that's wow.
It's not really an exaggeration. There were just no young people attending. And even the educators were frustrated because there had no place that students could come, to hear the art form. So we very intentionally created the Nash to attract young people to the art form, so that it's an all-age venue. In tandem, we created educational programs that give young people an entry into jazz, and those who are serious about it, a level of coaching that they can't get anyplace else in the valley. So that's kind of why we came to exist.
And this is Joel talking, of course, but
yes.
has it brought young people to the genre now? Have you found that at least that's happening locally?
Absolutely. I mean, we have a number of educational programs, that a futures program that attracts 10 to 18. We have an all girls 10 to 18 that gives females an entree into jazz without having to deal with boys. We have legacy ensembles that are coached by the top educators and Lewis Nash himself, that give high school students the opportunity to be coached by, top professionals. So, yes. And then we also bring in students from Title I schools, bus kids in from the fifth and sixth grades. And we have hot dogs and jazz on Saturday mornings once a month to bring in families. So, yes, there's a tremendous increase of young people at regular shows, as well as these specialized opportunities.
And Lewis, for you, what has the last 10 years represented in terms of the legacy so far? Because obviously this is a location that's going to be providing jazz for many, many years to come. But what's the legacy so far of the last 10 years?
Well, to piggyback on what Joel was just saying, for me, having spent, I left Phoenix, I'm a native of Phoenix. And when I left in 1981 to embark on my journey in New York City and around the world, I never dreamed of there being a place that my name would be associated with, which is doing the things that we're doing here. So for me, after a career of traveling the world and playing with some of the greatest names in the music and gaining experience with them and learning kind of at their feet, so to speak, I feel very privileged and kind of blessed to be able to then come back to my hometown and share many of those experiences and many of the things that I've learned at the feet of the master, so to speak, with many of the young up-and-coming musicians who are here in Phoenix. And I'm able to speak with a certain type of authority about those things because I got it directly from the people who created the language that we speak in jazz music. So for me, it's not the legacy isn't so much about me myself, but it's about what me being able to share and pass on the things that I learned and received from many of the greatest players to ever play this music while I was in New York and traveling the world.
And who were some of your influences that you've been able to bring to this space?
Well, Dizzy Gillespie comes to mind. I had opportunities to work with him, to get to know him, play with him. People like Hank Jones, one of the greatest pianists in the history of the music, Oscar Peterson, Ray Brown, Sonny Rollins. These are all names that people who know jazz will know are some of the movers and shakers and creators of some of the greatest music ever. So
institutions, really.
Yeah, institutions, exactly. And having had the opportunity to not only play with them, but get to know them as human beings and also be able to pass on some of that information to these young people who never got to meet them or never got to be in the space with them. That's important as well. Max Roach would be another name that I could throw out there as someone who I knew early on who influenced me and who's a legend and an institution.
And the goal, that early on goal of bringing young people into the fold and kind of regenerating that interest among them, how important has that been for you, Lewis?
Well, without that, there's no continuum. There's no continuation of the music. So it's not only extremely important, it's necessary. And without that, things will come to an abrupt halt. So being able to introduce techniques, language, history, and those things to these young people is, it's almost like watching them learn become aware of something that's very ingrained in American culture, but doesn't necessarily get the attention that many other cultural things will get. You know, so for me, I enjoy when I see a young person come to a realization about something musically or historically that they weren't aware of prior to their experiences at the Nash.
And do you feel either of you, maybe we can start with Joel, do you feel that what you've managed to accomplish here locally, a kind of sparking, if you will, of the interest in jazz happening around the country, or are you particularly unique in terms of what you're doing here locally?
Lewis can answer the question probably more on a national scale. I can tell you that the Nash is unique in, I like to say that we incubate them on one side of the building and we present them on the other side. We have a unique formula for bringing young people into the art form. Have we made a difference? I think we've made a quantifiable difference locally. I think we're developing some incredible players that are going to go out and continue this music.
Is that rejuvenation happening around the country or even around the world, Lewis?
I have been witness to similar ventures around the country and around the world to pull in younger musicians. So yes, it is happening around the country and in other countries. But what I'd like to say is it's very important for those of us who are doing this work to be fully invested in the communities that we live in and the spaces that we are living in, so that we don't necessarily look at it from a national or worldwide viewpoint, but we're extremely focused on what's going on right around us. And if each community around the country and around the world is doing that, then I think that's the important work, and not being necessarily influenced by or driven by, although we can share information, the various organizations nationwide or worldwide can share information, and we can ask and inquire about how they're running things and their programs, et cetera. But it's really important for us to just get a read on what's working where we are. That's one thing I'll say. Mm-hmm. Because what works in one arena may not work necessarily in another.
Oh, understood. Who are some of the young artists these days that are coming up? Either one of you, if you want to chime in, who are some of the young artists that are recreating or bringing the kind of energy that the Dizzy Gillespies of the world did back in the day?
Well, as far as the young, let's start with the vocalists. I'll start there because I'm kind of influenced by your intro. First, I will say this about that. You couldn't have picked a more authentic representative of the spirit of the music than Ella Fitzgerald for your kind of introduction into this music. So I'll start with a few vocalists. There's Cecile McLaurin-Salvant as a name that has become quite popular over the last couple of years. There's a male vocalist named Gregory Porter. There's another young female vocalist named Samara Joy, who's kind of on the scene right now. There's new blood kind of coming into the music from that aspect, from the vocalists. And then instrumentalist-wise, you know, some of the people who I think of as younger aren't necessarily younger
right
the
there
world
with you,
right
yeah.
now. I mean, but they're younger than me. So let's take Christian McBride, for example. He's been around for a while, but someone like Christian is sort of the Ray Brown of his generation. And he's also involved in bringing young people into the fold. I mean, in New Jersey, he and his wife have an organization where they are doing similar things to what we're doing. So the newer generation of players are also involved in education and some of the things that we're involved in. There's a young pianist. Joel, what's the pianist's name? Who does Emmett Cohen?
Emmett Cohen, yeah.
Emmett Cohen. Yeah, he. When the shutdown was going on, he was one of the people who was very active with streaming live performances from his space when we couldn't go out and play and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's quite a few young musicians on the scene who are perpetuating the art form in a big way.
Net segue.
I'll mention one other name.
Oh, please.
Jonathan Batiste, you probably know from the TV show. When I was teaching at Juilliard, Jonathan was one of the program as one of the students as a young pianist. So even though he may be in a different arena now, he's still bringing the knowledge from the jazz world that he acquired to wherever he goes and whatever he applies himself to, whether it's the movies or television or whatever it is.
And that makes me, I'm thinking of two questions that are kind of tied to what you just said. One of them is, how has the kind of digital world, whether it's social media, whether it's people producing their own music and just putting it online, have you seen that as a positive influence in terms of the preservation and evolution and growth of jazz?
I'll say this. I tend to try not to look at it as positive or negative. It's just the way things are in this present moment. The young people are doing it this way. They're not buying records the same way we used to, even CDs. They don't do that. No. They're downloading, you know, stuff and uploading things in a different way. And so rather than look at it as positive or negative, I try to embrace it as much as possible and see how we can just continue to do the work we're trying to do and using those platforms and those methodologies that they're using to continue with our message, which existed prior to this technology. You know what I mean?
Do you have a sense of whether it's creating new opportunities?
I believe it is, frankly. Anytime you can reach as many people as you can reach via these new technologies as quickly as you can, to me, that's a new opportunity. Whether we know how to use it to the best way is another thing. But to me, that's a new opportunity to be able to reach that many people that quickly.
Yeah, and that's the thing about all of the technological changes that have occurred, even in the last decade, is that they're still unfolding and we're still learning how to use them. And one day we have MySpace and the next day it's virtually gone. And the next thing you know, everybody's talking about TikTok, and 3 years from now, who knows what is going
right.
to happen.
Right, that's right. Well, here's the thing. In jazz, we have a tradition of mentorship and coming through the ranks, so to speak, and being able to do like I did, to play with great people like Betty Carter, all the names I mentioned previously. Mm. And it's possible for an artist now to kind of enter the scene online without having to do that necessarily. I don't think it's the best way to do it, but that possibility does exist. And some artists have done that. I think it's their loss that, in a way that maybe not financially or publicity wise, but by not having a chance to learn at the feet of a master or be on the tour with a great player night after night, seeing how they do that, there's something that they'll miss out on. But in terms of simply what you were asking about, yes, it is possible for someone to kind of burst onto the scene like that online without having gone through the rigors of having to play night after night with a great player and make the music work and figure out things on stage and all that. It is possible.
So, Joel, when you run into people on the street and you talk to them about what you do, and if one of them says, "I've never listened to jazz," what's kind of your elevator pitch for them in terms of trying to get them exposed to the music or to come to the club?
I'm laughing because I went to a luncheon with some people that swore they disliked jazz, and when I stood up and was about to leave, they said, "But we love Diana Krall." And so, I mean, people have misconceptions about what jazz is. There's so many flavors of jazz, and you know, people may or may not have been exposed to a form of it that they enjoy.
Yeah.
So it would be a different world if jazz would just pop up at halftime and, you know, at a football game or something. People would just get exposed to it, in a random situation and discover they love it. I mean, because that's what happens when people come to the Nash. They're there and they invariably leave thinking it's, you know, one of the greatest, experiences they've had, and they enjoy it. And frequently they will talk about some of the hallmarks of jazz, the improvisation, the communication on the stage, the this and then that are, you know, that are hallmarks of jazz that they had no idea about. And yet when they're in the environment and get to enjoy a band live, they get tuned into it. So it's a matter of exposure. And that's, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do is increase opportunities to expose people to jazz. And in fact, mm-hmm. you know, moving forward, we're talking about having pop-up events throughout the city. So
tell me about that idea.
It's not fully developed, but we're going to have pop-up concerts at various various venues throughout the valley. It's being planned for the coming year.
That seems to be the thing, is that it's getting folks who may not have grown up at all around it or stumbled upon it in the way that perhaps I did as a younger man to hear it and spend a little bit of time in a room with jazz playing, and particularly playing live, of course, so that they can sort of open their eyes. I also wonder if there are times when perhaps you try to explain what jazz is to people by talking about how much other music has come from jazz. Do you find yourself sometimes in a nice way educating people about that?
I have found myself in that position, but it's mainly, if I'm in that position doing that explaining, it's with students at the university who I'd like to pass on some, you know, historical knowledge to, or someone who's inquiring in more depth, you know, at a club or something, someone who asks a question and is, but I generally don't try to just offer it.
I guess the danger is seeming pedantic or something, I asked that question because as a teen, like a lot of teens, I grew to love Led Zeppelin music. Now, as an adult, as a much older adult, I listen to some of the stuff that Jimmy Page does on a guitar or even a Stevie Ray Vaughan, and I hear jazz.
Yeah. Well, you really hear the one of the biggest elements of jazz, which is the blues, which is a predecessor in a way. So that blues element is something that, in American music, it's the thing that really captured the attention of, say, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and those people. That element, that blues element, has always been a hallmark of jazz. And so you're absolutely correct when you say you hear that when you hear those people that you mentioned.
And I hear in someone like Stevie Ray, who's improvisationally,
while
playing, right? You're hearing, you know, the echoes of jazz.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah.
Do you know who Sister Rosetta Tharpe? Do you know that name?
I do not.
No. Okay. Since you're a Stevie Ray fan and a blues guitar fan, it sounds like Google Sister Rosetta Tharpe, Tharpe. She was a big influence on Elvis. She's at the beginning of rock and roll guitar before Chuck Berry. This is a black woman from the 20s, 30s. You'll have to check her out.
Yeah, I will. where does the Nash go now? You've had this, I think, steadily, just such a successful kind of trend in terms of what you've done over the last 10 years. Where do you guys go now? What's coming up for the Nash?
Well, we're very intentionally trying to diversify our audience. Latin jazz is an area of particular focus right now. You know, Latin jazz music brings lots of new faces into the Nash, which is what we want. So what we've done is we've created a monthly Latin jazz series to put a focus on it for purposes of marketing and getting more people to be aware that we're doing this. It's funny, you could present it once a month, but unless you structure it in a way that it gains attention, it's not on people's radar. So we're very intentionally going to put it on the radar of the Latin community that we're doing this at the Nash.
Oh, that's great. And I'll make sure to talk it up whenever I have an opportunity. Absolutely. And I guess it kind of also speaks to maybe what traditional audiences are versus not traditional audiences. And I think what I kind of hear you saying is that sometimes we presume that maybe a certain audience may not want to come in to a jazz club. When again, it's like, are you reaching them? Are you connecting with them? And are you giving them a reason to come through the door?
Right. Well, that's we're not focusing a lot on the why they're not coming. We're just trying to build more reason for them to come. That's how we're growing the audience.
Where do you want to see Lewis the Nash go from here?
Well, I'd like to see the things that have been put in place remain in place and expand. Again, it's a matter of making more people aware of the venue and the space and what goes on there, so that I guess my focus is similar to what Joel was saying, getting more and more people into the place so they can actually experience what goes on there, the feeling of what happens in there and the energy of what happens in there. It's one thing to just talk about it and all of that, but once people are in there, they feel viscerally what's going on there in a different kind of way than any way you can talk about it to them. So I guess the focus would be on just getting as many people in there to experience it as possible.
Well, fantastic. Well, thank you, gentlemen, both for taking the time to talk to me this evening. Congratulate you on your 10th anniversary and wish you absolutely the best of luck in the next 10 or 20 or 30 years or whatever it may be.
Thank you so much, James. Fantastic. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Vanguardia America.